Tonight I want to talk about what goes into Dana practice. I've called it the ingredients of generosity because when we try to notice what we're feeling as we practice Dana, we often see that it's not what we want to feel. For many, many years, I think since the beginning of what eventually became Alameda Sangha, I encourage people at the end of our meetings to spend some time practicing Dana before they leave for the evening. Occasionally, I'll repeat what the Buddha said we should be feeling with this practice. Before giving, the mind of the giver is happy. While giving, it is made peaceful. And after having given, the mind of the giver is uplifted. Now, although Theravada Buddhism is especially good about explaining things, it often doesn't explain in sufficient detail to understand how we get from point A to point B in real life. So when people tell me that they've looked for these states of mind that the Buddha said arise at three times, they're feeling something that they don't feel good about. So how do we get from what we currently think and feel about Dana to what the Buddha said we can feel? The suttas do offer lists of things that the mind often experiences around Dana other than happy, peaceful, and uplifted. My intention in this talk is to flesh out the names that are given for these feelings in contemporary terms so that we can be comfortable enough with our actual experiences at point A to begin cultivating the untroubled generosity that's promised at point B. Let's start by looking at the importance of being generous. Generosity is the foundation of all spiritual development. Makes it sound kind of important. The Buddha made it the very first step for new practitioners to take. With audiences who didn't yet consider him their teacher, he would start by emphasizing the importance of giving, then move on to ethics, then letting go of clinging, etc. Now, for us lay practitioners, the mode of practice laid out in the Udana is a gradual awakening that starts with 10 years of Dana practice, then 10 of ethics, and finally 10 years of meditation. It's generosity that begins this long process of weakening our habitual tendencies of clinging to views, sensuality, and unskillful habits of thought and behavior. All teachings of the Buddha and of teachers who followed him are concerned with our hearts. The mind needs to chip in on the work. But this is essentially what His Holiness the Dalai Lama called a religion of kindness. And that's not an intellectual aspect of our being. We need to open our hearts, expand them, not let them tighten and cling to things, as it does so often in normal human life. Only an open heart can experience fully what is going on in our lives at every moment without retreating into greed, hate, and delusion. An open heart allows us to live with an unguarded awareness that sees things as they truly are. That enables us to make wise decisions about how to act in regard to whatever these present conditions are. The goal of the Eightfold Path is the destruction of greed, hatred, and delusion. Cultivating generosity directly debilitates these things that create clinging, and it gives the mind a pliancy that allows for the eradication, specifically of delusion. Attachment or clinging cannot exist at the same time as generosity. Now, the suttas talk about what's often called the mundane benefits of giving, such as a feeling of abundance, that you have enough for your own needs so that you can give to others. Also, giving makes others like you, and it's good for your karma, which I interpret to be the weakening of mental habits that lead to suffering, or more precisely, to the self-generated and almost constant phenomenon of dukkha. The most important benefit of generosity is when the mind becomes flexible enough for the attainment of nibbana, the extinction of all of the causes of dukkha. It's said that at the moment of enlightenment, we see through the illusion of self to our true nature. And stinginess no longer has any basis. Selfishness is gone. To me, this indicates that during our years of practice with Donna, the feeling of generosity often is mixed with other sentiments. So here we are with our mixed feelings. I remember one person many years ago spoke up and said, "I just don't like giving money away. It doesn't feel good." Here's a list from the Dana Sutta that refers to these ingredients of generosity. I'll just name the items and then go through and discuss them. Annoyance, fear, in return for a favor, in the hope of getting a favor, because you think giving is good, altruistically, to gain a good reputation, to maintain a family tradition, with the thought that this gift makes the mind serene. Gratification and joy arise. And then the highest motive is the thought, this is an adornment of the mind, a support for the mind. So there's room for explanation on almost all of these. And annoyance, I think you can imagine the situation where this first thing would arise. As you're walking down the street and people are asking for money, I experienced this in Bali in particular. They wanted me to buy or just give them money. And I was very tempted to just give them something to get rid of them. One commentator talked about giving a gift that in itself would be annoying to get rid of people. A good gift could also be given in a way that disturbs people enough to make them go away. And I'm not going to try to pantomime that. I'm sure if you let your imagination play with it, you'd come up with something. The second reason is fear of danger or embarrassment. Say you're approached by someone on the street, you might give from this motive that there are people standing around and you don't want to look stingy. Now, please remember that I'm not mentioning these things to embarrass or make you feel guilty. This sort of motive was common 2,500 years ago, enough that it, you know, got into the Sutta, and in all the weeks in between today, and it's still common. We usually do give with mixed motives. The practice of generosity is intended for us to see this, to get to know our own hearts as they are, and not some idealized version of how they should be. We have to proceed from where we are now. The third mixture into our motivation could be in return for a favor. This is really important for us now. In today's terms, that would be reciprocity. It's a very big element of giving for us in this money-based economy. The value of anything and everything can be expressed with a dollar sign or a euro or whatever. We can calculate the value of anything very precisely, such as a friend giving us a ride to the airport, a box of candy, an evening's entertainment. It's very easy to find out what any of those things cost, and it's a knee-jerk reaction to want to give back according to what has been given is worth. So, what about a Dharma talk? Dana practice is about being generous, having that feeling. And if we follow the motivation to reciprocate, we can fall prey to some closely related thoughts. We might think, well, this Dana talk is like an evening class or a lecture. And what would I pay for that? Well, these are discount tickets because I don't really have to pay anything. So I can give half of what I'd pay for a class or a lecture. Or we could think this teacher is new or didn't really give a good Dharma talk, or I just don't like this teacher very much. So reciprocity can lead us down some byways where we lose sight that Dana inherently shows respect for the Dharma. And our chance just to experience giving what is generous for us. The fourth mixed motive is the hope of getting a favor in the future. And I don't think I need to explain that one. It's pretty simple. The fifth is because giving is considered good. This is another big one when we face the Dana basket. I know because I've given Dana countless times over the years. It is always a chance to look inside. And I find this there a lot. We want to be good, to do what's right. But you can probably see that it has a tinge of ego to it. I want to be something other than just what I am. Often there's a desire or a motivation to give altruistically. We think, I have more and therefore I should give more. The difference between this and the sense of abundance that I mentioned earlier is that doing what we should feels a lot heavier than the buoyant sense of abundance and delight that we are able to give. Number seven is to gain a good reputation. Now, the San Francisco Chronicle recently had its December season of giving, and it always listed donors by the category of how much they had given. And lists like that are at the back of the programs for concerts, for fundraisers, etc. So it's easy to see that the notion of charity often has reputation kind of chained to it. Clearly, that has ego. I kind of get a chuckle out of to maintain a family tradition. My family did not have any traditions like that, but they really were never in a financial position to do so. But there are families that support institutions and such, and this may have a little less ego in it than seeing your name made public for giving a gift. The ninth reason that can be mixed in is with the thought that this gift, this may sound familiar, makes the mind serene. Gratification and joy arise. It sounds a lot like the original happy, peaceful, and uplifted that I quoted from a sutta at the beginning of the talk. The highest motive, number 10, is the thought. This is an ornament of the mind, a support for the mind. This means that the intention for giving is to rid the mind of the ugliness of greed, hatred, and delusion permanently. It's better than happy, peaceful, and uplifted because this intention leads to liberation, while the benefits of all these other motives increase as their number on the list gets higher. The first few, you could probably tell, have either negligible or actually negative value. The value of whatever it is we're feeling when we give is not canceled out because it's, you know, lower on the list. This is like darts. You know, you throw that little thing with the sharp point in the wings, and you get points, even if it lands way out or sort of in the middle. Almost none of us can hit a bullseye every time. So we probably don't do that when we're giving Donna either. We just keep aiming for that bullseye and add up whatever we get, and it's a very valuable practice. When we're here at this Sangha meeting and we've calmed the mind down a bit with meditation and heard the Dharma and thought about it together, and then given the benefit of all this to all other beings, the mind is really primed to practice giving with this highest intention. While we observe the other influences on our generosity, we need to be very careful not to judge what we see, or we won't be able to see it clearly. The mind will just contract if we don't look at it with kindness. According to a little sutta called A Person of Integrity's Gifts, we can practice with the way we give as well as just watching our thoughts and feelings. It says when we give with integrity, we do 5 things. We give with conviction, attentively, in season, with an empathetic heart, and finally, without adversely affecting ourselves and others. So to give with a sense of conviction may relate to those previous mind states I've mentioned. Before we give, of course, we decide to do so. And I'll often consider how much Donna I'm going to give before I leave home. I'll look to see how much money I have. And maybe the last time I gave, I didn't give so much, so I want to give a little more this time. Or it's a day long instead of just a meeting or a half a day. And despite what I've decided, I may hear something in the talk or experience something from the program that I see the Dharma in a new way, and it makes me so thrilled with the Dharma that I want to give more at that time. So attentively, it's just paying attention to what we're thinking and feeling. In season, this means at the right time. We've all given birthday gifts too late, and they're usually accompanied by an apology. It's just so clean if we do it on time. With an empathetic heart, you know, if you're just rolling by somebody with a cardboard sign and sticking a dollar out the car window, you know, I try to at least make eye contact and smile. On the street, giving, to take a moment. I like to, instead of thinking about what I'm parting with, think in terms of compassion for that person. It does change the dynamic between us. And sometimes I leave with the feeling that friendliness has actually been established. The meaning of the thoughtful gift, that we've actually thought about what would make a friend happy. And finally, without adversely affecting ourselves and others. That's why I check my money before I leave home. Generosity doesn't involve injuring our finances, either what affects the family or our partnerships, or we give what we can afford. There's a section number 535 of Book 5 of the Jatakas that says, From little, one should give little. From moderate means, likewise. From much, give much. Of giving nothing, no question can arise. So just as in the Bible, the suttas acknowledge that if a penny is the most we can give, it's a generous gift. So I will continue to encourage you to practice dana every time I teach, because it's such an important and rewarding thing for us all to do. As a teacher, I may appear to have a conflict of interest in encouraging you this way, but I would hope that when you give dana after I've taught, you think in terms of giving to the Sangha. Half of what's in the basket goes to the church, and from what Deb and I take home, we pay a variety of expenses that the Sangha has. And I hope that no one feels that they're paying us for the teachings. It's our opportunity to practice, and it's a privilege to carry the Dharma. The Dhammapada says, the gift of the Dharma surpasses all gifts. The taste of Dhamma surpasses all tastes. Delight in Dhamma surpasses all delights. The destruction of craving conquers all suffering. In the Dana Sutta, the Buddha said, there were six factors of the most valuable gift possible. We've already covered the donors, which is paying attention to the mind and encouraging it to reach for liberation from suffering. The factors on behalf of the teachers are to be free of craving, aversion, and delusion, or practicing for the subduing of craving, aversion, and delusion. And what qualifies Deb and me for teaching is that we are very earnestly practicing for that. And we know the Dharma pretty well. So I hope that this exchange of your practice for my practice will be the only transaction between us. I hope that you will do this practice of watching your mind here during and after giving, where this Sangha is so conducive to cultivating the highest motives. And that means being generous in order to transform your mind and heart and move toward freedom. In this way, the gift we give each other will be our practice. Thank you.